Good morning. Today is Wednesday, December 8th, and you're listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Taylor Chalstrom. This Walnut Wednesday episode features information from Walnut Boarding Commission CEO Michelle Connolly about what the industry has been up to in 2021 and what to look forward to in 2022. After that, we'll review today's national and regional news, and we'll finish off the show with information on soil chemical analysis with UCCE Irrigation and Water Resources Advisor Andre Biscaro. We'll dive in right after this.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing, activities that are often too big for one operation to tackle on its own. There are unique ways the California Walnut Board and Commission deliver value. For example, health research gives consumers more reasons to believe in walnuts, while new and improved walnut varieties and production methods increase profitability, and it ensures the issues facing our industry are in the front of government decision makers. Learn more at walnuts.org.
The 2021 crop year, although presenting some challenges, was overall an exciting year for the walnut industry. Although the COVID-19 pandemic put some stresses on the walnut industry as well as the tree nut industry as a whole, success still prevailed. Walnut Board and CEO Michelle Connolly outlined some of these successes.
This last year, we had our largest execution of our American Heart Month, which is our retail campaign. We saw tremendous participation from over 10,000 retailers throughout the country in bringing a presence to walnuts at the retail level. We know it's so important to get in front of the consumer where they are. We built upon that success with having our first snacking program that we executed in the summer. And we were again at retailers and over 7,400 retailers throughout the country, and making sure that walnuts are thought of as a snack. I think there's sometimes that thinking amongst the consumer audience that walnuts are a great go-to for baking and cooking, but they don't often think about them as a snack product. So that's our goal, is to really change that consumer perception to potentially increase consumption and certainly help the industry to continue to grow in new ways.
The Walnut Board has also had great successes on the research side of things.
They continue to grow, whether that be post-harvest or production research, as well as health research. Projects that we undertake continue to add value for our growers. And one area that we're continuing to explore, as we know, sustainability is on the forefront of everyone's minds. And so we're actually looking at some products that delve into byproduct utilization for walnuts and exciting new areas, and certainly potentially something to monetize further.
Connolly said the Walnut Board has also undertaken initiatives to improve the marketing order for walnuts and have it bring more value to the industry by eliminating the, quote, outbound and outdated inspection process.
This is going to bring some streamlined efficiencies for industry and also cost savings. So we're quite excited. This is going to be an ongoing process as we work with USDA to do rulemaking. It's an 18 to 24 month process, but we're really excited about what things will happen as a result of that. It will streamline the marketing order. It'll give us a new way to assess in the future. And again, bring more value to our industry.
As for what to look forward to in 2022,
one thing that I think is really important that's kind of going to take us right into that 2022 year, and that's our continuation referendum. Every 6 years, USDA requires that the California Walnut Board go through a continuation process, and growers are voting on the future of our industry. It's an exciting time because we certainly see that we're moving toward the next generation of the California Walnut Board with the changes that we're hoping to make and implement, that growers, again, will also have an opportunity to vote on as we go through the rulemaking process. So I just encourage all of our growers out there to make sure when you receive your ballot in the next few weeks that you certainly vote to make sure that we continue to bring value to you and support the programs that help to build demand for California walnuts.
A great deal of currently funded research will also continue into 2022. Connolly outlined some of the programs that had success in 2021 and will hopefully continue to have success in 2022.
We've been working for years on our breeding program. We have an endowment with UC Davis. And as a result of over 20 years of work, collaboration between the board, between UC Davis, and between our growers, we actually saw the introduction of the Wolfskill variety, which is really exciting. As you know, these are long-term investments that the industry has put forward, and having them come to fruition is just amazing. And it's due to the collaboration. So we really do appreciate all of our partners in making these things happen for industry. And what's exciting about this varietal is as our breeding program looks to find the optimal mix of characteristics. And for walnut breeding, this Wolfskill variety does have some of those characteristics that we look for, which is a later leafing and an earlier harvesting variety. So we're really excited to see what this can do and potential for future walnut acreage as a result of that.
The Walnut Boarding Commission will continue to boost demand for walnuts domestically and internationally in 2022 and beyond. And one of the top ways it will do that will be by continuing to showcase walnuts' health benefits.
We've been investing now for about 30 years in areas, all areas of health, from heart health, which is where we got our footing, to now we've expanded our program and we're doing projects that are looking in the areas of cancer, sleep quality, diet quality, a lot of various different disease states and public health issues. And that's incredibly important because we know that health resonates with our consumers. In fact, that's the number one reason why people say that they buy walnuts is because they're healthy. And so an important part for us in getting that message out is continuing to conduct research that resonates with our growing and changing consumer needs.
As for other ways it will boost demand,
we have on the domestic side of the house, we do a lot of activities around raising consumer awareness, from public relations to retail related programs that drive consumption, as well as to some smaller degree advertising. On the export side of things, we have a mix of countries we're in. We're in 10 export markets. We continue to expand to develop new markets and new market segments. You know, in line with our industry's strategic plan, our goal is to grow overall consumption and continue to build demand. And so every year we go through and analyze all of our markets and look at where we can certainly find new avenues for California walnuts, especially as we look at what's on the horizon. We have about 50,000 non-bearing acres that will be coming into production. So these markets are incredibly important to us in growing that demand, and consumers have been extremely responsive.
Connolly also gave an update on where the walnut industry currently sits from a global perspective.
The U.S. is the world's second largest producer, only to China, and Chile is number three. There are several others. I won't go through all of the facts and figures with you, but those three players I think are important to note. When we look at how things are changing amidst how walnuts are traded, you know, California has traditionally held about two-thirds of export trade. In recent years, we've seen that change a bit as China, who is the world's largest producer, has started to export more product. They've grown from about 2% to now about 14% of their product being exported. So we're certainly in the space seeing more competition, particularly at a time when we're also, our crop comes in, their crop comes in. So we're seeing more pressure there. You know, Chile is continuing to grow as well. Now, Chile is contra-seasonal, so it doesn't tend to affect us quite in the same way. But certainly when we look at the global growth of walnuts, you know, California is just one piece of the puzzle. So continues to be a challenging environment.
That wraps up our first segment of the day. We'll be right back with today's national and regional news after this.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
We're back with today's national news talking about crop insurance. A challenging 2 years for ag producers has led to innovations and flexibilities from the crop insurance industry to help growers mitigate these circumstances. Rod Bain with USDA has more.
It has been an interesting couple of years for the nation's crop insurance industry. As Tom Zacharias of National Crop Insurance Services explains.
As we come out of the pandemic, in 2019 we had the prevented planting situation, 2020 we had the derecho.
Not to mention extreme drought, floods, hurricanes, and other natural disasters that have challenged the crop insurance system and local agents and their abilities to respond and serve their customers. Yet Zacharias notes.
Crop insurance has responded quite well to the tough times that we've faced.
That has been due to innovation and greater flexibilities within crop insurance products, both traditional and new.
Probably the best example in the past couple of years has been the hurricane index product.
A product Zachariah says has grown the last 2 years to reach about $190 million in premiums.
Also in the news, rapidly changing economic conditions make it hard for the U.S. Department of Agriculture to do commodity forecasts. USDA's Gary Crawford has more.
Each month, the USDA's Outlook Board makes new forecasts for ag supply, demand, and prices. December, usually referred to as
the calm before the storm.
Yes, not much new U.S. crop information comes out in December, so Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski says to make those forecasts, his analysts mostly have to just look at how Southern Hemisphere crops are doing, how U.S. ag exports are faring. However, this December won't be so easy because of
enhanced economic uncertainty.
Very enhanced, some of this uncertainty coming from the new Omicron COVID variant.
You know, that caused a pretty sharp sell-off in petroleum markets and financial markets. Markets bounced back a lot, but this economic uncertainty and implications for employment and implications for ongoing inflationary pressures, all of this certainly has not settled down any.
And it certainly could affect demand for U.S. farm commodities. How much and when? That's what USDA analysts are trying to work out.
Foreign crop conditions play a role in USDA supply and demand forecast.
We're watching weather in the Southern Hemisphere where South America crops, corn, soybeans, planting continues and crops are kind of in the early stage of development there. So weather developments are important. Australia, wheat harvest is underway, and then you got the summer crops that are developing, cotton, for example. And then in the Northern Hemisphere, we're continue to get some final government estimates, final harvest results from, you know, places like the EU and Ukraine and Russia.
In today's regional news, University of California Integrated Pest Management has a new online tool for what animal caused wildlife damage in a grower's field or orchard. If you think you have an animal pest but are not sure what it is, this online tool, called the Wildlife Pest Identification Tool, will help you narrow down potential vertebrate pests using signs such as typical damage, tracks, and droppings. The results will show you information on identification and biology with links to more information, including management options. The Wildlife Pest Identification Tool, which is available on the UCIPM website, provides visual evidence of animals such as coyotes, mice, reptiles, and some birds. That wraps up today's regional and national news. We'll be right back talking about soil chemical analysis with UCCE Irrigation and Water Resources Advisor Andre Biscaro.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Soil chemical analysis is part of a good operations nutrient management program, and the accuracy of these test results are important for fine-tuning fertilization. UCCE Irrigation and Water Resources Advisor Andre Biscaro explains the implications that an inaccurate test might have for a grower.
In case an analysis comes back too high or too low, there's a good chance that the fertilization program would be excessive, or the fertilizer amounts applied would be excessive or insufficient, leading to nutrients deficiency and yield losses in some cases, or to excessive nutrient amounts in the soil, which can lead to negative, like economical impacts, and also in addition to potential nutrient losses to surface and groundwater. So in addition to the fertilizers, you can think of soil amendments also, where, for example, an analysis comes back with a pH that's too high or too low, and then the use of gypsum and or sulfuric acid, which is very commonly used here in California through the irrigation water. And that can be totally can be excessive again and or too low, so it can be a problem for nutrient availability and again crop yields and profits.
When evaluating soil test results, there are certain aspects of basic soil fertility that a grower should be concerned with.
First, we need to make sure that the samples are properly collected, right? And that the sample is representative of the area you're trying to assess. And that includes the depth of the sample. So you can think of the depth of the crops and the depth of the sample. So, and changes over time is also important to keep an eye on. If you're getting like wild changes in nutrient contents over time, then there's probably something wrong, except for nitrogen. So, but the most important point is to figure out what implications the levels showing analysis will have in the fertilization program or how much fertilizer is applied. So, more nutrients is needed, how much, when, what type of fertilizer are you using. So understanding the results, like what is that result too low? Is that sufficient? Do I need to do anything about it? So accuracy is important for guiding that.
Recent research completed by Biscaro observed patterns of accuracy and precision across soil test results from different commercial laboratories. Biscaro discussed what prompted him to conduct this research and some of the results.
It's a subject that really intrigued me since I got out of graduate school and started my current job with the UC Cooperative Extension. While searching for best laboratories to send my samples to for projects or for just quick diagnosis, I never obtained a straightforward answer for what these labs would be. You know, some people recommended some labs, some people others, but so throughout the years, I realized that what I went through was something more common than I thought. And so I when I had the opportunity, I just pulled the trigger and decided to tackle the subject and work on this project.
Biscaro explained what accounted for some of the inconsistencies that he found with sampling methods, reporting, and analysis among the different laboratories.
So we had basically two laboratories that performed very, very poorly, like with accuracies ranging from 18 to 50%. And then two laboratories performed really, really well, with really good accuracy and precision. And then we had several other laboratories right in the middle presenting varying results of accuracy and precision. And the precision means how different the analysis came back for a same reference soil that we used over time. So we sent the same sample now a month and a few months later several times, and the results sometimes have come back very differently. So but in addition to these issues with inaccuracy and imprecision, we found inconsistencies in the methods of the analysis. For example, for assessing soil salinity, the main method used is to, by researchers, extensionists, and consultants, is the saturated-based electrical conductivity, saturated-based EC. But we often found analysis performed by the 1-to-1 or 1-to-2 methods, which are proportion of distilled water and soils added. That sometimes can save time, but when it comes down to action, the thresholds are mostly set within saturated-based extracts.
The issue, Biscaro said, is that these types of intricacies are ones that growers might not be familiar with.
And that's where the problem is, when there is no consistency in this method. Some people may not understand why the consistency is important and what are the methods they're using when they're looking at a specific number. Although they come out with the same unit, if they use different methods, that can have huge implications on, in this case, how they manage salinity or how they what sort of leaching fraction they determine. So in addition to that, pH, for example, soils with pH that are more than 7, some laboratories reported in Olsen P, and some other laboratories reported in Bray. So that can also be an issue. Inconsistency in how the methods were used, how they used the methods by the laboratories were reported in their websites. So, you know, not all laboratories have that very clear. So it's confusing also for us. We're familiar with the topic to understand how they're doing, what they're doing. Well, reporting units, which is, you know, relative to the user, but it goes back to the point of, well, if we try to adhere to a method and a unit or certain units, it'd be a lot easier for us to discuss with our clientele these results and not having this thing of, you know, often we're presenting results and people are familiar with PPMs, but then others are familiar with mean equivalents and others are familiar with pounds per acre foot of soil. So it can be challenging. So, you know, but I believe that should resolve itself with time, but it'd be nice to see some consistency with that as well. And in the interpretation of the results, right? So, and here I'm mostly referring to sufficiency and efficiency ranges, the sufficiency and deficiency ranges used by the laboratories. We often see graphs indicating low, adequate, and high, and we not always understand where that information comes from.
Indeed, eye-opening to some of the inconsistencies with commercial lab testing in the industry. The question at hand is how labs can become more consistent, whether that's providing more easy-to-understand results or using universal methods for quantifying more accurate results.
There are methods that are accepted as standards for the Western regions or for the United States. So most laboratories in here, they apply to the soil plant and water reference methods for the Western region, but which is a lot of it's based on the methods of soil analysis that's published by the American Society of Soil Science. So yeah, and most labs are familiar with that and I understand the main issues is to be consistent with those methods, right? Once you understand what methods we're using, you know, we expect the consistency and then the labs, you know, that's what they do. They train their staff and implement. And I mean, we hope they'll implement internal quality control programs, right? So they could check themselves and see how they're performing. But also having a proficiency program that's maybe run by a collaboration between the university or universities, laboratories and growers association, maybe, where all labs join permanently, not just when it's convenient, when they could join this program, that could be a solution. A lab does not have to join a proficiency program nor show how accurate it is. So having a proficiency program that is run by different entities and that, you know, where the clientele actually recognize that as a standard is important and request the laboratories to participate in that program, that I believe could highly improve the quality of the analysis performed by the laboratories.
An accuracy and precision certification program for laboratories would likely benefit growers looking to test their soils.
It can help them to achieve optimal nutrient management, overall chemical or the management of the chemistry in the soil, which will improve yields and profitability by providing, you know, accurate results to consultants, growers, and to us.
Since accuracy and precision data for soil test results from different laboratories still isn't public information, Biscaro had recommendations for growers to best go about getting their samples tested.
I suggest that growers and consultants reach out to cooperative extension advisors in their area and inquire about it. We can talk about which laboratories they believe are performing or they're doing a good job. And a lot of us will have a good idea of who the good players are. So we can stick with those. Some may not be so well familiar, but they know people who are, looking into the subject.
That about wraps up our show today. Thank you for listening. This is Taylor Chalstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. Desal, formulated by AgroPlante, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. Desal will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlante's Desal flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With Desal, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlante today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplante.com.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.